Hey, what do you guys want to eat?
Pizza!
Cowabunga, dude.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Source Material. I am your host, Jesse Starcher, and tonight our show kicks off Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Week here on the Rattalichin Broadcasting Network. I welcome back to the show Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy podcast, my good friend Justin Thomas, who's been on here before, and Long Road to Ruin title card artist and creator of the Soul Exodus comic you can find at soulexo.com, Benjamin J. Cologne. Our main focus this evening is Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird's 1984 black and white independent comic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1. But prepare yourselves, folks. We take a nostalgia trip back to what it was like to be a kid and talk about all the facets those turtles from New York touched, including toys, cartoons, and pizza. Remember, you can always find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Just search Rattalich. All right, dude, let's talk about them totally tubular turtles. Who was Ronnie? You were on there with me and Cole, right? When we were talking about Rebirth.
Yeah.
I read Rebirth. I actually read Rebirth. That was one of the only new comics I bought over my vacation at the convention, and I actually sat down and read it.
What'd you think, man?
We'll see. I'm not as down on it as I think some people were. The whole Watchmen thing, we'll see. But I'm just. They had to come up, they had to figure out a way, like, Geoff Johns had a really thankless job, which was to figure out a way to, like, get rid of the new 52 without making it feel like everybody who was on board with it from the beginning wasted their time and their money, but at the same time to, like, say, it's over and everybody that hated it can come back now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of had to do that. Why they incorporated Watchmen? Maybe that was something that they had planned for a while. I don't know.
No.
And I don't know where it's going. I'm just kind of happy that, you know, DC can maybe start looking like DC again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've talked before about what we've read, but I mean, have you ever really enjoyed any DC titles yourself back in the day? Yeah.
It depends on how far back in the day we're talking.
Okay.
I didn't get into, aside from, you know, a lot of the Elseworlds stuff and, you know, Dark Knight Returns and Year One, that sort of thing.
Stuff.
Aside from that, I didn't really get into regularly buying DC books till Hush came out. All about Batman for a couple of years. And then Jim Lee was doing Superman with Brian Azzarello, and that story was confusing as hell, but Jim Lee's art was great.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right, let's go ahead and get to it here. We're talking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and it's source material, and of course, the movie dropped last night or today, whatever, Friday, Thursdays. I think movies come out on Thursdays anymore, don't they?
They do. They used to do a midnight release, so you go out at midnight, but now they started showing it at like 7 and 10. And
yeah, it's like it's just a regular old movie day anymore. So Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, out of the shadows, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Coming out of our shell. oh, wait a second. That was the name of one of their albums, wasn't it?
Yeah, their album.
Yeah. Out of the shadows, I think is what it is. But anyway, so the movie's released, and of course, synergizing with the rest of the Rattalichin Broadcasting Network, I had to come up with a good topic that's comic book related and deals with the turtles. And by golly, that's not too hard to do. So luckily, I had access to... The internet helped me out with a little thing called the top 100 comics in history, okay? Believe it or not, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one is considered one of the top 100 comics. Eastman and Laird came up with this concept. Kevin Eastman, Peter Laird, by the way, called the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and they released the first issue of a comic that they put together themselves. This wasn't under any type of... This wasn't published under Marvel, DC. In 1984, it was a black and white comic. The studio, I believe at that point, when they had put all this together, they had to come up with a studio name, and it was Mirage Studios. So they published this comic book, and like I said, black and white, four turtles, they're ninjas, they're mutants. It ends up taking the world... I don't want to say by storm immediately, but it definitely gets some eyeballs on it from the comic book reader's perspective. I can tell you myself, in 1984, I was not paying attention to... I was six.
Yeah.
I wasn't paying attention to any independent.
I was four, so...
I wasn't paying attention to any independent comics.
I was thinking, at 4 years old, I was thinking only one thing. That was He-Man.
He-Man. I knew it. Anyway, so I'll get you boys together. I know, you know, just like I said, Justin, I know he's a big TMNT fan. Ronnie, we've talked about the Turtles in the past. what is it exactly?
Turtles in time.
I didn't even catch that. What is it? When you were a kid, was this something that you were totally into? I know you were a He-Man fan yourself. Okay. All right. So what got you into the Turtles yourself? What was the thing about you?
The fact that it was different.
Okay. And of course you weren't reading the comics first. What was going on? What were you getting first? Was it the action figures or was it the cartoons?
The toys, man.
Was it the toys?
Yeah. Toys were awesome.
Tell me about your first figure. Do you remember what it was?
Leonardo.
Was it really?
Yeah, because he had the swords.
And that was that the one you asked for? Is that the one mom picked or what happened?
No, that's the one that I picked out on my own.
Okay.
You know, it was kind of like, if you're good, we'll go to Charleston and get you a toy kind of thing, you know, and which was, you know, cool. For some reason, I've always been a sucker for the leader, and he was the leader. To me, he had the coolest weapons, mm-hmm. you know, because I dug the katanas. And it just kind of took off from there. I was like, well, if I've got him, I need the others. You know, so I got Michelangelo, I got Raphael, and of course, Donatello was the last because he had the stick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a kid, I was like, I don't want a guy with a stick.
Wow.
Yeah.
Didn't respect the bow, huh?
Not then. No, no.
Oh, all right. Well,
that's, it wasn't into the whole sweet bow staff skills or anything.
So were you all first generation turtles?
Yeah,
they weren't like any of these second generation wind up things that you would see
generation stuff sucked.
Oh man, did it ever.
let me flip here real quick. And Justin, we're going to get back to you here in a second because I want to hear your story about what brought you into turtledom. But our third guest here, Benjamin J. Cologne, the artist, the creator of Soul Exodus. Tell us about your first Turtles encounter. We talk comics, we're talking toys. What did you first see, or do you remember what happened when you first discovered Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I think it was a little bit of both, the show and the action figures, because I remember my first memory of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was actually the toy commercial, which had some clips from like the first couple of episodes of the show, which looked really cool. And I don't know if anybody else's experience was any different from mine. That first generation of action figures, man, if you didn't get them like when they first came out, they were impossible to find.
Yes. Yeah, they really were.
Various members of my family like scouring, you know, the five boroughs of New York City looking for those. I think the Gotti family like bought them all up or something like that.
What?
I don't know how true that is.
That's the rumor.
It sounds like wow.
When in doubt, blame the mob.
Yeah, man. I can remember specifically in regards to the figures themselves. Me personally, I think I must have got them for a Christmas present because I was really excited initially, the cartoon. Okay. I can remember coming home after school and sitting down there to catch the cartoon when it was in syndication. I don't remember it ever being ever being one of those things I caught on Saturday mornings first. It was always after school, or maybe it was right in the morning. I can't remember. I can remember school happened at some point either before or after Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I caught it in the morning.
Was it in the mornings? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, caught like wildfire. I was a big turtle fan. Huge, huge turtle fan. And as a matter of fact, I shared on Facebook, I think it was sometime last year, I had a letter that my mom had found from, I think I was 10, maybe it was 88, I'm pretty sure. And I had wrote a letter because I had joined this fan club for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and I didn't get anything. I paid money, my hard-earned allowance, to join a fan club of something. I ended
got
up...
got hosed.
Dude, I never saw anything. Somebody did some research on it. And I think it was Stephen Marsh. Good Stephen Marsh did some research on it and found out, because I was mentioning something about the Chaos Chronicles, I believe is what it was called. It turns out it was this newsletter of that was sent out, you know, there was only like four or five of them made. The language that I used in this letter, because I was, number one, I was trying to find out, you know, why didn't I get my newsletter? It wasn't like I was using foul language or anything, but I was being nice. However, I was using stuff like phrases such as turtly awesome. So I've got to find, and I'm sure I've put a cowabunga in there a couple times or, you know, just goofy stuff, that I'm sure I gleaned off of the cartoon. All right. So let's go to Justin here. Justin, what brought you into Turtles, man?
It was the toys at first.
Was it?
Yeah, it was the toys. I have to actually hang my head down in shame. My first figure. I had no idea about bad guys and good guys at the time. I just thought that they looked cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with the Rhino with the gun.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah, I just, it drawed me, really drawed me. It was the first one I saw, and it was like a Family Dollar on a family trip. It just pulled me in, just the thought of these creatures, you know, animals with weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I got Leonardo afterwards.
Yeah.
Because of the swords, I always like the katana blades.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel you.
And then you know, just went from then on. But do you actually remember when they first came out how they actually had the smushable heads?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
See, a lot of people don't remember that, but I actually still remember that.
Yeah. You can push them down on the top. I can remember that. And then they would just kind of, you could squeeze the sides and it'd pop right out on top. Is that what you're talking about?
That's how you tell right there if they're actually first generation or, you know, the first ones.
Uh huh.
Because the rest after that, they made them with the hard plastic heads.
Okay.
I mean, even Rocksteady, Bebop, Shredder's heads, all soft plastic as well.
I got every turtle except for Mikey. And I end up getting a second generation Mikey. And I think, Justin, it was Maria's grandma and grandpa that bought it for me. it was a Michelangelo, and I can remember it has that hard plastic head. I've still got it sitting upstairs because there's no way. Mom can get rid of my G.I. Joes, which she did, and I somehow she talked me into letting me get rid of my G.I. Joes and give them to somebody that needed them. Bullshit. But anyway,
don't make me recant the Star Wars toys.
Dude, I know,
I mean, retell, not recant.
Oh, I feel you, Ronnie. And I definitely feel you too, Jesse. I mean, I just...
They didn't talk me into it. I just came in and they were gone one day.
Yeah, mine were in pieces when I came back from hanging at a friend's house.
Pieces?
Every figure of mine was like in pieces.
Why? What did you do wrong?
My cousin found them.
Oh, dude. I was going to say, I thought maybe like you came home late and, you know, like somebody got a hold of them and threw them under a lawnmower or something.
No, what happened was I've been saving these figurines for years. We're talking all the old school stuff. And when I got collections, I usually got full collections because at the time my mom would work at, say, Benjamin Franklin, and then she would hook me up with all the figurines.
Oh, yeah.
At that, you know, at that time that were coming
that's
out.
That's the hookup. Nice. Nice.
Dude, I raised by my grandparents. I spoiled them. Yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, I had this huge, you guys familiar with the chemical drums, like from a plant?
Yeah.
They're they're not the metal, heavy metal, but they're the
plastic.
This thing was completely full to the brim of action figures, like crammed in there. And it had one of them lids on it that only I knew how to open, and of course an adult did.
Oh, dude.
And
that's awesome.
The only thing I could think of is he knew they were in there, and he whined around and whined around until my aunt opened it up and let him into it. And then they didn't know what he was doing down there. They just thought he was playing. And then I come home 2 days later.
I would have cried.
To that.
I would have cried.
I'd have killed him.
I beat him up for 7 years.
It's like scheduled. It's like, all right, you gotta
get in here. Time to get your whooping.
Another weekend. It's time to come on over. All right, Benjamin, let me know here. Do you still have your figures, or did you donate them? What happened?
I can't remember what happened to them. At some point, I got rid of them.
They are gone, though.
Or they were gotten rid of for me. Yeah, that was. I got a lot of stuff. I never got quite as many as I would have liked.
Yeah.
And I also couldn't find that first generation of Michelangelo.
Yeah.
I got a much later, like, wind up one where I think one of the.
That's exactly the one I've got sitting upstairs. You wind it up, and his goofy little arm twists, and the nunchucks look stupid.
Well, geez, Jesse.
I'm pretty upset about it. I got lucky here. It was about a year or so ago, and I went to an auction, and there was a ton of He-Man and Turtles and some G.I. Joes, I think, all together.
Did you post that picture?
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah, dude. I got, is it Leatherhead, the alligator?
Yeah.
I can't remember if I got a Mikey in that one or not. I don't think I did. But I got a few really cool ones. There was Muckmaster. What's the name of that one, Justin?
It was Muckman.
Muckman.
And Joe Eyeball.
There you go.
Dang.
Justin knows it. Yeah, I can rely on the man for some names.
How many of you pizza consumption increased after this?
Benjamin, still to this day.
Benjamin, you are a New York native? You grew up there? Okay.
Well, I grew up here and other places, but I was born here and I've lived here for about 2/3 of my life.
Is there any truth to what Justin's saying here? Did pizza consumption increase?
Not for me, because I'm from New York. Like, or, you know, every, you know, this is the pizza capital of the world.
There you go.
Strangely enough, considering it's, you know, Italy. I've always been a pizza guy. So,
heck yeah. You got a favorite pizza spot up there?
Well, it used to be the place that, you know, that my family used to live upstairs from years ago in the 80s.
Oh, dude, how could you not?
Oh,
like,
man.
Smell pizza all day long. That would be awesome.
That'd be heaven to me.
But I got a place, you know, a couple of blocks, you know, easy walking distance from my house that I visit frequently.
And
that's how you can write it off, because you can walk there.
It's not that long. It's really not that long of a walk.
Well, neither was mine. When I lived in Ohio, I was walking distance of a Giovanni's, and but that's how I wrote it off. Sure, I'd go up and get me a steak sandwich, and I'd be like, hey, I'm walking it off. No.
Dude, my parents got so tired of eating Pizza Hut. Jesse can definitely name the place I ordered from a lot.
Station?
Yep.
That's what I thought, right across the river. St. Yep. Mary's, West Virginia. All right, so let's talk comics. That's not what you called for. You called for comics, and that's what we're going to talk about. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, issue number one. Like I said, 1984, black and white. What do you think of the black and white? Was that something that kind of jarred you in any way, or was it? Did you like it? Did you not like it?
I like the actual black and white color scheme. I mean, it doesn't really bother me, but then again, I like to read mangas as well, also.
Okay.
And most of them are black and white, and I'm a sucker for old Universal monster movies and sci-fi flicks like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just, yeah, like I said, I just, it never does bother me.
Back when I read it for the very first time, I'd never really seen a black and white comic book, so that was what kind of threw me off.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, like I said, it was definitely different, kind of black and white. So it was kind of like being that young, it was almost something like you weren't supposed to read it because black and white, you know, it could be an adult comic.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely 80s, and it's definitely, if all you were familiar with is the cartoon, it's definitely different from that.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I think, we were talking about the mask earlier, but speaking of a very tearful and brightly colored property that has its roots in an incredibly violent comic book. It's been a while ago since I first read that. I've read the first issue of TMNT a couple of times, and I like it a lot. Years ago when Eastman and Laird, or at least Peter Laird, I think was the one holdout who still, was the last to hold on to the rights to the Turtles, and he was running the Ninja Turtle website. For a while, they actually on the Ninja Turtle website had the first issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in its entirety to read on the website.
Oh, wow.
That's where I first read it. I don't know how long ago. This may have been up to like 10 years ago or more where I first read it. Even when I was a kid and even when the cartoon was out, I had some vague awareness that, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles started as an underground comic book, independent comic book, by these two guys who, put it out independently. It's funny, Eastman and Laird's story about how they made TMNT number one was...
Yeah.
It's sort of like the inspirational feel good story for any independent comic book artist, because this first issue, which was only ever meant to be a first issue, was literally made like on a tax return in a dream.
That's where I think a lot of my respect for creators and trying to get their work out there comes from, seeing people that put their life and their livelihood on the line just to get something like that out there. This guy, just like you said, they had to borrow some money, I believe, to try and get something going. If I remember right, I could be wrong, but
it was a combination of, I believe, one or both of them, both of their tax money and they borrowed some money from Kevin Eastman's uncle.
Ah, there you go.
And basically just self-published, the first issue of this first issue we're talking about. It was published on the cheap, really cheap paper stock. It was basically, it's basically a pulp comic. The original first printing of this comic had a print run of like a little over 2,000 copies, which makes it obscenely valuable now.
Yeah.
Because it's so rare. Yeah. It was reprinted so many times with so many different variations that there's a lot of, there's a lot of room for people to get scammed on, like, which is a first print. So it's apparently pretty hard to tell which is a first printing of this comic. I think people get scammed on that all the time.
Mm, I didn't know that. I knew that it was rare, specifically because, just like you said, they put this out there. It's not like they didn't have two big companies backing them and way different back in the 80s. This is 1984 when this thing hit stands. So much different from the way things are now in regards to having any idea who or is going to buy your comic or how many people are going to buy your comic.
This is why I still have a box of first issue copies of Soul Exodus number one in my closet, just in case.
Just
in
when the big break happens.
You can't honestly see this going to like places like People's News, though. I definitely can't picture that.
Well, let me ask you here, Justin. Have you ever seen a black and white Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic?
When I was a child?
Yeah. Did you ever see one? You ever hold one, actually look at it?
No, not when I was a child, no.
Okay. How about you, Ronnie? You ever see the black and white, the Mirage Turtles?
I want to say yes, but I don't know for sure. It's one of those things where, like, it's been so long ago since I read it. I don't know if I saw an actual one or not.
Okay. How about you, Benjamin?
Not any of the originals. I actually, the issue that I'm reading off of, the version of issue number one that I'm reading off of, is from this gigantic phone book size trade paperback that I got. Also from the Ninja Turtle website. They published one volume of this. Damn near 600 pages. It's got the first 11 issues of the original Mirage comic, and a couple of each turtle got its own solo book, and there's a couple of like side stories and issues of one shots that got published around that time, and it's all in chronological order. literally like a month after I bought this comic, this trade paperback, Viacom and Nickelodeon bought the rights to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from Peter Laird and completely shut down the Ninja Turtle website and designed it.
Oh, man.
And when they relaunched it, this comic, this trade was nowhere to be found, and they never printed a volume 2 that continued it. So this is one of those few times that I actually kind of lucked out.
Yeah, dude. That's what I'm saying. It's going to be scarce and wanted.
I'll tell you, I was guilty of the Ninja Turtle Archie comics.
Oh, really?
Back when I was younger.
I love those. Those were great.
Yeah, I mean, they were so much like the cartoon is what it was. I guess that's what attracted me to them.
They were in some ways, but they were also, because with not everybody, you know, the original Mirage series, it starts off, the first couple of issues start off as gritty and street level, and it's a lot of homage to stuff that Frank Miller was doing at the time. What not everybody remembers, unless you actually were reading the original series at the time, it makes a really, really hard right turn at, like, over-the-top sci-fi at around issue 3 or 4.
Yeah.
With the Triceratons?
Yeah, yeah. The cartoon took a lot of cues from that, you know, eventually. And the Archie comic took a lot of that and ran with it, too, and also incorporated a lot of characters that they made, you know, that they made for the toy line that they ended up not really using many of them in the cartoon.
Also, the Archie comic introduced the Mighty Mutanimals. The original Mighty Mutanimals, I can't actually remember their names, but there was a jaguar guy, there was kind of like I want to say like a dingo, kind of like a dog wolfman kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
There was Ray Filet, also known as Man Ray. Leatherhead was in that group also.
Okay. All right. This is, if you guys have the opportunity to look, this issue, I found this issue on the shelf at a Hills. It was Hills before they went out of business up here in, you know, in Marietta. I don't know what I was doing. I'm sure I was just hanging out looking in the toy section, and laying below the toys was copies of this comic book, and it was a black and white TMNT number 16. The story in it's really weird. I remember picking it up going, what the hell is going on? I was not used to what I was seeing in this comic book. It was some kind of, the front cover is a picture of somebody like looking out a portal, like they're trying to open up something. And there are the turtles standing there in front of them with the red bandanas and everything. I remember just going through this comic book, and it's about some kind of interdimensional thing coming over and talking to the turtles. I was lost. I didn't know what the heck was going on. According to what I just saw, this was copyright 1988. Now, I don't know if they did second printings or whatever, because I'm fairly certain I would not have picked this up if I was not a big Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan at the time. July of 1988 is when that came out. So
I remember that cover.
I don't know what the heck that thing was. So let's talk some more about the comic here. The plot of this comic, I mean, I'll give a very brief synopsis, and any of you boys want to jump in, go right ahead, okay? Because the plot synopsis is actually it feels very similar to the original movie, TMNT movie, where we pretty much get the origin of the turtles. That gets told. However, the way they introduce us to the turtles right at the beginning is probably one of my favorite parts of this whole book. I don't know, they're up in the city, and they're fighting
Purple dragons.
I was going to call them the purple hoods. The purple dragons. The purple dragons.
Wait a second.
I know. I didn't even mean to go that route. I don't know why, but it happened. It wasn't a purple helmet, so I'll just put that there. Where they're fighting the purple dragons, and it's like this gang has cornered the turtles, and they've got to make their way out of out of this alleyway. We don't pull no punches, okay? This is not your happy-go-lucky Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles here that I was used to on my Saturday morning or my weekday evening TV. These guys were legit. They were ultra violent. I think one of the first things you see with Raphael is, I mean, he's gutting some guy practically. he's stabbing some dude in the stomach.
if you only knew the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles through the cartoon, then this is kind of a big departure. But if you saw the first movie, some of this starts to look familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
posted this just a couple of minutes ago because apparently Mark Ratliff is watching the first movie right now. I mentioned that, you know, I loved the original movie when I was a kid when it first came out. I saw it in the theater like everybody else did that was a fan back then. And I loved it back then just because, you know, I was, you know, going to love Ninja Turtles no matter what. But I actually grew to love it even more when I later on started seeing how faithful to the original comic it was. And
mm-hmm.
I was really impressed by that. And there's a lot of that in there. And, it, you know, there's a lot of love in that first movie for the original comic, which... some of it may have been done, you know, out of, you know, affection for the comics. Some of it may have been out of necessity because there were a lot of characters from the cartoon that they couldn't use, so they didn't. You start to see, and as the comic goes on, you'll start to see, like, the personalities of each turtle are really way closer to how they are in the movie than in the cartoon. And down to the violence, down to the focus on, like, you know, the action fighting styles, you know, fighting gangs and, you know, getting down in dark alleys and, you know, just kind of kicking ass and taking names. It's all here.
When I first read it, I was really familiar with toys in the cartoon, of course, and everything.
Uh-huh.
I was taken aback at the violence. I was like, the turtles don't kill people, you know?
No, sir, they do.
Yeah. This was how they were supposed to be. And the different look is the cartoon and all that. And, uh-huh. Just like was said, the original movie was more of a love story to the comic book, and it stayed pretty true to it. So that was cool. Now that I'm older and I can realize that, it's really cool to see that.
I would definitely agree. I mean, honestly, it's the first movie that I ever really heard. Well, first movie that I would go see that I actually heard a cuss word in.
Yeah, the turtles cussed.
Oh, dude.
That caught me by surprise so much during the movie.
What was you going to say, Benjamin?
If you just think back to, you know, at the time that this comic came out and before, you know, the cartoon came out in like 87, I think, at first, mm-hmm. 87 or 88. Mm-hmm. And this time, you know, in 84, you know, Eastman and Lara were, you know, this was a little bit of parody and a lot of homage to a lot of stuff that Alan Moore and Frank Miller were doing at the time, especially Frank Miller with Daredevil, which we talked mm-hmm. about and we'll probably be talking about again pretty soon. Also, Ronin, which I don't think we've talked about, one of Frank Miller's, unfortunately, pretty, you know, lesser known, but still really amazing comics during in the 80s before he lost his damn mind. There's a lot of that in here. Like, if any of you have ever read Ronin, and if you haven't, I highly recommend it. But there's a lot of Japanese influence in that, clearly, because, you know, part of it's you know, it's a take on a, you know, man out of time samurai. It was Frank Miller, like, doing these crazy, like, ninja or samurai action sequences and sword fighting and that type of thing. And if you've read Ronin and then you go back and read this early Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic, you get you see the influence immediately. There are far worse things to, you know, be influenced by than Frank Miller in the mid-80s, so...
That's true. Why don't you go ahead? Because I know I've got to give you the honor here, Benjamin, to let us know about the origin of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and how that parallels to a creator that you just mentioned.
Well, there's some stuff before that, but I'll jump to, you know, what you're talking about is basically after Splinter is kind of, you know, pet orphaned, for lack of a better term,
mm-hmm.
in New York City. And what we specifically talked about, and we did talk about this when we talked about Daredevil Man Without Fear. At one point, there's a blind man, you know, trying to cross the street. Truck is about to hit him, and an unnamed boy pushes him out of the way. By the look of the panel, dives at him, you know, to kind of tackle him out of the way.
Uh-huh.
A chemical, you know, a can of chemicals falls off the truck, hits the boy in the eyes, or it says, you know, struck the young man near his eyes, for bouncing, you know, onto the street, somehow leaping off the ground to hit a fishbowl that a little boy was carrying that held four tiny baby turtles in them, which he was holding near an open manhole for some reason. but the chemical goo, you know, or ooze, if you will, and the turtles all, you know, fall into the manhole. They all fall into the sewer. The turtles are covered with the ooze. Splinter tries to rescue them. Gathers them up in a coffee can. He is also comes into contact with the ooze, and within a matter of, you know, a day or two, they start, you know, doubling in size, increasing in, you know, intellect, and they become, you know, mutated into what they end up becoming in the comic, which is, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
You talked about the origin here. I think you were the first one that told me about how this mirrored Daredevil. As a matter of fact, a lot of stuff in this particular issue or mirrors the creation of the turtles, mirrors Daredevil.
If you really want to be technical about it, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are now, like, you know, kind of, sort of, almost in the Marvel Universe. That's how close it is.
Wow, you're dang. Right.
I actually saw this. I can't remember if it was a Pinterest or Facebook, but it had a picture that told about the connection there.
Well, go ahead, Justin. Let us know. Let our listeners know the connections between Daredevil and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And you guys feel free to jump in.
Benjamin pretty much nailed it right there. I mean, it's the chemical.
Yeah.
They're saying it was the same chemical is what they're saying on that post I saw.
But also, the names of our characters are some of the characters. Well, I guess one character. I don't know if it's some or just one. Well, you got the foot, which was the opposite of the hand.
Yeah.
And Ronnie, do you know what the other one is?
Splinter.
There you go. Splinter is the analog or reverse analog or whatever. Obviously, an homage to Stick. There you go.
Yeah.
One thing that kind of stuck out to me that was different with Shredder's and Splinter's origin was the love interest. Love interest wasn't part of the movie, was it? Where, let me rephrase that. Where Splinter's, what was his name? Help me out, guys. What was Splinter's owner's name?
Yoshi.
Yeah.
Okay. Yoshi and Oroku Saki, there was a love triangle where...
In the movie, Splinter was the pet of Yoshi.
Okay. What was the love triangle there, too? Okay. It's been so long since I've watched the first movie.
All right. I know this because if you want to go, like, I'm about to outdork a couple of you. you know, not only did I see the original movie like everybody else did, I read the novelization of the first movie.
Oh,
nice.
Wow. Awesome.
Respect.
And that, the Splinter origin is actually closer to the first comic in the novelization than it is in the movie, where Splinter was Yoshi's pet and they were in a love triangle with Shredder. You know, at that time it was Oroku Saki. It was his brother who Yoshi kills because he's about to kill and possibly rape his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. They get into a fight. He kills Saki's brother. Saki vows revenge. Tracks him down in New York. Kills Yoshi. Kills his girl. And that's how Splinter ends up on the street. That's in this comic, and that was also in the novelization. And I guess, you know, they probably cut it for time in the movie. They probably, like, you know, rearranged it just, you know, to save a couple of minutes in the movie.
That's one big difference that I noticed. But it felt, again, that was a very small, if not negligible, change. Splinter ends up comes over to New York with Yoshi, and then Oroku Saki works his way up through the Foot Clan, and by golly, if clans aren't good enough for anything, it's to expand their empire. Oroku Saki gets the great honor to head the Foot Clan over in New York. So that's where our gang of ne'er-do-wells, headed by the infamous, who took on the name Shredder just because. I don't think we get much of an explanation as to why he did that. He just becomes Shredder. I mean, that's all there is to it. No explanation as to why the guy wears a cheese grater on his hands or, you know, anything like that. But he just wears it to look menacing. I could tell you, as a kid looking at Shredder, he looked pretty awesome to me. Nowadays, I can give him a hard time because it does kind of look goofy. But he has the ninja look with the face covered and only the eyes showing. And what else to make yourself more deadly than to put some blades on your forearms and on your hands and everything else like that? Really, what we get here is more of a, if you're familiar with the movie, it's more of that, where Well, Splinter says, hey, you need to take vengeance for my master. Challenge Oroku Saki and kill him. Which is, whew, I guess that's a little bit different than the movie. Shredder is the aggressor in the movie, obviously. Splinter here in this comic book's like, you know what? How about we just go ahead and head this off the pass? You guys go kill this guy for me. So he sends, I don't know if it's Michael, no, sends Raphael. He sends Raphael out to send Shredder a message and let him know it's on. It needs to go down. And Raphael shows up there and pretty much delivers the message, takes out a few of Shredder's gang. And I think he, I don't know if he kills any of them or not. I think he does. I think he does. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He takes some of them out. Shredder shows up on top of a, the showdown goes down just like in the movie, right on top of the building.
One by one, he completely kicks each and every one of their asses. And there's a little bit of that here. They kind of switch up strategies like halfway through the fight when Shredder finally shows up. This is after they've already been, you know, kicked around by the Foot Clan. Like, they win, but, you know, they make a point to show that, you know, they got bloodied up and bruised up in the process. So they're already weakened. And then, you know, Shredder starts going through them. And they, he, you know, Leonardo being the leader, he kind of, he calls out that, you know, we got to switch up strategies. We got to attack them all. We got to attack them as a team, but we got to attack them from a distance. And they start throwing like shuriken and start doing, you know, team moves and trying to hit him, you know, from each angle. It's actually a pretty, they actually tell a pretty good story with that, considering, and they show how they work together. It's a little bit different in the movie because even when they all attack him at once, he still beats him.
Mm-hmm.
Here it actually works.
Yeah,
it seems like they were a little more cohesive of a team in this too than they were in the movie. Raphael was doing his own thing like always, and then didn't want to listen to Leonardo, but they just fall in line at this.
I mean, we know that all four of these guys, you get a sense of them being a shade bit different, but you certainly don't have Michelangelo going pizza time.
Yeah,
or Donatello being the nerd. You get none of that in here.
Yeah,
nothing. It's just these four turtles, they're vigilantes, and they're going to kick your ass.
They also use the shurikens and other ninja weapons as well, which they don't do in the movie.
That's true. Mm-hmm. It's not, well, I don't know. Michelangelo used some sausage links, didn't he?
You stop it, sir.
In part two, yeah.
Combat cold cuts.
That's right.
I don't care what anybody says. I love that part.
So back to the fight, just like we were talking about, they're attacking him from a distance, and they're finally starting to get the better of the Shredder. You can see it progressively gets a little bit more violent. And finally, I think Donatello's bow knocks his mask off. He's bloody. He's got blood dripping down. So Shredder looks like he's getting beaten. Leonardo finally comes up on him and shoves his katana through his stomach. Holy crap. Spoiler alert, folks. Shredder is dead, issue one. This is, okay, I'm reading this. Ronnie, when I was reading this, I sent you a message, and I sent, I think, Stephen Marsh a message at the same time and said, Shredder's dead. It's issue one. What the hell's going on? Because I hadn't read it. What do you think about this, Ronnie? What did you think when you saw that?
No.
No?
No. Well, it was kind of one of those things where now I look at it and I'm like, that's kind of a build up to nothing. I mean, it was still really cool. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I'm like, he could have been so much more. He could have, you know, drawn it out for 10 issues or whatever, but they just kind of get the point across, you know, right there that they are not to be trifled with. Mm-hmm. So later on, they can go fight with the Savage Dragon.
I just read that not too long ago, by the way.
That is the same turtles, by the way, too, isn't it?
Yep. It's supposed
all
to be,
red,
yeah.
All red masks, yeah.
So, Justin, what'd you think? Shredder's dead, man.
I was definitely surprised.
Okay.
I mean, that definitely caught me off guard.
Of course, I'm saying this because we live in an age where we grew up in this age where with the cartoons and Shredder's like their, you know, master nemesis. There's no way this guy is going to die anytime soon.
Yeah, he can't kill off Uncle Phil.
That's right.
Wait, I was wondering when somebody was going to mention that.
So, right here in issue one, I'm taking verily by surprise when I watch Leonardo shove his sword through Shredder's stomach. It comes out his back, and you even see...
Pretty gruesome.
It is. I didn't ask you, Benjamin, when you first read this, was this something that took you by surprise, or did you know what you was getting into?
Kind of, sort of. Like, I remember the very first time I read this, somebody actually linked this page with the link to the Ninja Turtle website that had the first issue of the comic. So I knew going in, but that's what made me want to read it, was because, like, you know, they make it a point. They were like, if anybody, you know, the person that told me was like, if all you know is the show, this is like completely different. And Shredder gets killed in the first issue.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, spoiler alert, he's not really dead.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But this was the best indication that this Eastman and Laird really had no intention of making any other Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic besides this.
Yeah.
This is your first clue. And then when Turtle blew up and the comic was able to continue, eventually they brought him back, and it was, you know, it was a big deal when they did. They kind of leave the ending open anyway, which I guess we'll get to in a minute.
That's true, too. Yeah.
Because they give him, you know, they give him an out, like, you know, they hand him the katana and tells him, you know, to commit seppuku and kill himself to, you know, regain his honor, and he chooses not to. He tries to blow them all up with a grenade that he had hidden. He gets knocked off the roof, and the grenade goes off. He's gone. Everybody assumes that he was vaporized by the grenade, I guess. But that left a pretty good out for him to come back later. It's either pretty shocking, you know, and it's pretty effective when you have your main villain get killed in the first issue of your comic, or, like I said, it's a pretty good indication that you probably had no intention of that comic continuing in the first place.
Yeah.
I think the people who were probably taken the most by surprise by how successful and how much of, you know, lightning in a bottle that you know, the whole Ninja Turtle thing was, I think the people that were taken most surprise by that were the creators of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we got something here.
I've been touting this documentary on Facebook for the past, you know, a couple days there. Turtle Power is free to watch on YouTube if anybody has the opportunity to do so. It is a very good documentary about the creation of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and how it became such a big hit. And it goes into so much great stuff, specifically about the creation of the toys, the creation of the cartoons. It was so awesome to watch all of the voice actors get together and talk about the cartoon and what they did in the cartoon, and just to see them sit there and talk with a face that sounds okay, that voice sounds just like Donatello from the cartoon, but that's that guy's actual voice. And I had no idea James Avery was Shredder. No clue. Absolutely no clue. And they must have shot this like shortly within like 1 or 2 years before he passed away. It was neat to watch how they came up with this concept and was just taken aback by how popular it became immediately. And they didn't realize they had such a great concept on their hands. And what's more is the fact that it was an enduring, independent concept.
Mm-hmm.
That is what is really astounding here, because I don't know of, and Benjamin and Ronnie, Justin, if you guys know of any other independent comic book that is still around to this day with this much marketing appeal, with this many films under its belt. I mean, is there something I'm missing? Is there a title out there, some type of product that I can't think of off the top of my head that even compares to what happened here with these guys?
Nothing that I can really think of.
I mean, there's been stuff that's come close, but never quite the, the product line as they have done with this.
Yeah, I mean, we can't count Big Two. Because I'm saying independent for sure. And that, I mean, that's the only thing else I can think of. I can't think of anything else.
I mean, they tried doing that with the Tick. I mean,
oh, well, there's no way that, I mean, the cartoons I heard and the live action are highly touted, which I've never watched, but I've heard a lot of people speak great things about the Tick. But I mean,
yeah, you can't.
That's not in the same.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see Michael Bay calling the,
Oh no! But I'm just saying.
Well, if he can ruin somebody's childhood,
don't give him any ideas.
I'm just saying that they tried to pull the same stuff with the Tick at one time, and
okay.
I mean, they've tried that.
The Crow, you know, yeah. Depending on yeah. Cerebus by Dave Sim, but that's like strictly an independent comic. Like you know, he never let that become anything else.
Yeah.
If you want to count it. If you want to count it by, you know, you said big two, so this may count, but probably the absolute closest that anything has ever come with is probably Spawn.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
The Mask. They tried that one.
That's... Okay. Okay. I honestly can't think of anything else that rivals it.
I was going to say, I just want to throw out there, if they ever have Tatsu on the new cartoon, it should be voiced by Jesse Stark.
I said it today.
I mean, let's hear it, Jess.
I told Caleb, I said, go play.
See, they'd screw you over because they'd only hire you to record like two or three phrases and then they'd just replay them over and over again.
That's true. I was Tatsu once. Oh, man. I just remembered that. I think my first taste, well, I don't know, because I picked up that issue, that black and white issue at Hills. I was talking about that. One thing that I remember, there's a panel or a page here where just after he has that grenade in his hand and Donatello throws the bow and hits Shredder in the mouth and there's blood going everywhere. That particular panel is in my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles role-playing game book sitting right over there.
Awesome.
I remember seeing that and going, what the hell is going on here? Shredder is getting messed up. I didn't know. I didn't know if it was from a comic or if they were just drawing this for the actual role-playing game itself. So obviously, I get my answer here. So interesting stuff. And that's pretty much it. I mean, just like Benjamin said, they kind of leaving out. They find a piece of Shredder's metal armor, but his body's gone, and that's the end. That's our introduction and what they thought potentially would be our only look at the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But as we've talked about, clearly that was not the end. Benjamin, you got some notes there? Anything we left off? Anything you want to talk about?
I think we hit the finer points of the comic. Since we're talking about everything else that this comic kind of spun off.
Yeah.
Am I gonna get a ton of hate if I mention the very first NES game?
Oh boy!
Not at all.
Oh boy!
Because everybody seems to have such a love-hate relationship with that game.
Oh, I love to hate.
And it was hard as balls. I don't
like,
dude.
But you know, when you got the hang of it, you know, I don't know anybody that ever actually finished it. But if anybody here has finished it,
my hat goes
off to you, man. But yeah, but you know, when you got the hang of it, and if you knew how to conserve Donatello, it was fun. It had its moments. Everybody hates the damn level. I'm proud to say, like, I finally figured out how to consistently kick that level's ass, like, over, you know, after a while.
The seaweed level?
Yeah.
Fuck that level.
Electric seaweed.
Oh my God.
I mean, you will go through, you will wear every single turtle's life down to, like, one unit, but you can, it's doable.
It's possible, huh?
But, those villains on that, I mean, where'd they come up with some of those?
There were some substances involved, I think.
All I can say is ABGN.
Yeah.
His whole spiel on that. Oh, man.
I remember playing that game, and honestly, to this day, I probably devoted a good 20 minutes to that game because it didn't feel like what I wanted it to be. And I don't know if it was because I was spoiled with going to the arcade and playing the great 4-player. I don't think it was Turtles in Time. It was just,
Ninja Turtles, the arcade game.
Yeah. Now that one, I love.
It was known as the arcade game when they ported it over to the NES, I guess by popular demand.
Popular, please.
Man.
I played the second one to death on Nintendo. Oh, man.
So I remember playing that original one, and I was just like, I don't like this at all. And but I can remember specifically the freaking seaweed stage. Hated that. Mm-hmm. When I was able to go to the arcade and drop some quarters in that great 4-player arcade game, oh my gosh, man. Just
that was my arcade gaming childhood was the Ninja Turtle arcade game, the Simpsons arcade game, and the X-Men arcade game.
Yep.
X-Men.
Yeah.
Yep. That's...
Yep. Nightcrawler on the X-Men game.
Hell yes. And later Mortal Kombat 2.
Now, somehow I ended up with a Turtles in Time for the Super Nintendo. That is probably, honestly, the... up until recently, but that was the first game I ever got Caleb to actually sit down and play with me until we beat it. And that game's not too hard to beat, Turtles in Time, as long as you got some time to devote to it. I think the cheat code, Justin, I think you told me the cheat code for getting like a couple extra lives or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, now that was a game, that was a blast.
Thank you, emulators.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Ronnie, are you watching any of the new cartoons just by chance?
No, not really. I probably should just for nostalgia's sake. I haven't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right because they do a good job. How about you, Benjamin? You watched any of the new stuff?
I watched a couple of the first couple episodes years ago when it first came out, and I liked it, and I hear it's really damn good, but I just haven't gotten around to, you know, catching up with any of it.
There is so much where they throw back to the old stuff, and not only that, but they throw back to pop culture references in general, like even horror movies. I will say they throw in some horror cliches and stuff from the original movie, and that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to watch a good bit of the seasons because Kira was going through these things like wildfire.
Mention one last thing that, you know, I can tie back to the comic. Talking about the original NES game that everybody seemed to hate.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a buddy of mine actually had a version of the cover to that game as a poster. And I always, that's one of the coolest, and it ended up being, aside from the cover of the first issue, one of the most enduring images of the, you know, of the Ninja Turtles that existed from the original comic. Cause it was a redoing of the cover to issue 4, I think it was. I don't know if anybody had that poster, but I always wanted it. Like, I always thought that was really cool. They had that. That was the cover to the NES game, and it was also a cover to the Tiger handheld game, which I also had.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And it took me forever, but I figured out how to beat that, too. I still wish I had that game.
I remember the picture of them fighting the Triceraton. Really, I mean, that really stands out there to me also.
I think that was an issue of the comic. I want to say it was like 5 or 6, maybe. Something like that. I'm looking through my trade right now.
Reading that.
Yeah, let's see if I see it anywhere.
I was going to say, didn't the Turtles just recently cross over Batman?
Yes. Yes, they did.
And I actually profited a little bit from that.
Nice.
On a whim, I got a copy of, you know, the Batman TMNT crossover, the first issue. There was a blank cover, which is what I started. I've started doing a lot of blank cover sketches. I did one in pencil, you know, it was sort of a semi homage to Dark Knight Returns, where it's raining, you've got lightning in the background, and it's Batman and the Turtles on the cover.
Nice.
I did that in pencil. It took me forever to you know, decide to ink it. On a whim, I grabbed it on my way to East Coast Comic Con, which I had a table at in New Jersey last month, and I needed something to do while I was at my table, so I figured I'd ink that cover. It ended up coming out really nice, I put it out on my table, and that Sunday, somebody came by, and he really loved it, and he was from England, and he kind of, you know, he asked me, how much do you want for it? And I won't say how much I sold it for, but I told him I kind of struggled with it a little bit because it was actually so good that I wasn't sure if I wanted to sell it, but I had to make some money at this convention. But I told him, and he whips out, like, the amount that I told him, and he puts it on the table. He's like, I'll take it. I'm like, damn it, I could have charged him more.
He's like, I'll take it right now.
He did. He sold it. It kind of broke my heart to have to kind of part with it so quickly. But the silver lining to that is I was at MegaCon in Orlando last weekend, and I got another one.
Nice.
I got another blank cover of Batman Ninja Turtles number one, and I'm going to do
another
one. That's
awesome.
Very cool.
So are we going to actually cover this one, Jesse?
What's that?
Batman and Ninja Turtles, we gonna cover this one?
Oh, well, yeah, I can tell you right now, Marsh wants to be all over that, because I think he was reading that one straight from, right from the get-go.
It's better than you think, and it may even be better than it probably has any right to be. It's pretty good. It's pretty damn good, considering.
Seriously, that's when I first heard about it, I was like, oh boy, this is going to be... I was not thrilled at all, to be honest. Marsh kept talking about it, and he's like, you guys got to read this. Oh man, he kept shooting us, I don't know if it was panel shots or shots of the covers. I heard a little bit about it, and it definitely sounds like something I'd want to talk about. There is one burning question we did not answer. Benjamin J. Cologne, first off, who's your favorite turtle?
Leonardo.
Yep.
And I always felt like the weirdo for that too, so I'm glad there's a couple of people on this podcast who
Oh heck yeah, dude. I'm a Leonardo fan all the way.
Leonardo fan for Ronnie. Yeah. Justin Thomas.
I'm going to go with Donatello.
Gotcha.
Can I say that I'm glad that nobody said Raphael or Michelangelo?
Uh-oh. Now wait just a minute. Uh-oh. Ronnie Adams. I haven't asked myself the question.
Well,
answer
shut
that
up.
Question. I clearly was Raphael. What's your problem with Raphael?
He's annoying.
Bull crap.
No, he's not annoying. Michelangelo was annoying.
Okay, I'll give you that.
They were both annoying on the cartoon.
Yeah, that's true.
I loved Raphael. Let's not try to be adult here. Let's talk about being on the playground when you played Ninja Turtles. You were calling your Ninja Turtle out. Ronnie and Benjamin, I know you guys had nobody asking you if they wanted to be Leonardo and you be somebody else. You guys go ahead and be Leonardo. Everybody wanted to be Raphael.
Man, okay? I had two, you know, because they sold these everywhere. I had two plastic, you know, samurai swords specifically for that reason. Oh,
yes.
No joke.
That is freaking awesome.
and they didn't match, though. They looked completely different.
Oh, but they were freaking swords.
But that's all right.
Yeah. There was swords.
Yeah, I had all the ninja toys except for my pap actually made me a real bow staff and and a real set of nunchucks out of wood with a chain in the middle holding them together. Dude. And my cousin knocked himself out with them.
That's beautiful.
I think every Ninja Turtle fan has an ill-fated nunchuck story in their past.
He was twirling around like, oh, look at me, I'm Michelangelo. Whap. But I tell you, the worst one I ever seen that someone got knocked out was my best friend. They use bolas, right?
Yeah. Oh no.
What's that? What is that?
The ball on the end of the rope that you swing around and capture somebody's legs.
Okay.
Yeah, we were at his house. He goes, hey, I made my own Ninja Turtle weapons. You gotta check these out. He actually had made a string and used fishing sinkers on each end. So here he is, and he made it too long to begin with. So he's twirling above his head, and just right about when he's getting ready to throw it, he dropped it down, and the thing the thing wrapped around his head, which it took forever to finally come around, and it finally came around, and the fishing sinker nailed him right between the eyes
and knocked
him out.
Oh my god!
It was like, oh man, just look at his face. Like,
it's going to come. It's coming. It's coming. It's wrapped around his head. Damn!
He was waiting for it.
If this were nowadays, somebody would have gotten that on video. It would have been on YouTube like a million times over by now.
Absolutely. Oh yeah.
We're a generation removed from, you know, like everybody's embarrassment just being immortal.
People are too careful now for that.
Oh yeah.
Thank goodness. Man.
Just the, you know, how long that took to wrap around his head.
Jeez.
Oh.
Well, I can't find anything else I want to talk about here in regards to the turtles. Ronnie, you got anything here, buddy?
No, they're timeless. I mean, if you were around our age, you had to have watched it. And if you didn't like it, there was something wrong with you.
What character would you guys say is most off the wall out of all the figures?
Baxter Stockman.
I have Baxter Stockman sitting upstairs, as a matter of fact.
I wouldn't consider that completely off the wall compared to some of the newer stuff that came out.
The newer stuff, dude.
The newer stuff doesn't count.
When they were showing some of the stuff on that documentary.
Oh, man.
Some of the stuff that they were coming up with that never got to the toy line. I can't remember who it was. One of the artists from Mirage Studios was submitting stuff to Playmates. I think it was him, or maybe it was somebody else, said that at one point it seemed like there was no figure in that line that had two arms that were the same.
It was always I know there was a running thing with the cartoon that there was that they turned out so many different ideas and so many different action figures that there was just no way, like, kept getting pressure from Playmates to incorporate them into the cartoon, and there was just no way. So there were plenty of characters that they created for the toy line that never made it to the cartoon. I can't imagine what was created that never made it to the toy line.
Dude. Oh, jeez.
Well, the one guy was, wow. He said he was creating stuff that civil service related. Here's the stoplight guy with a stoplight for a freaking head. It was just some weird, weird stuff. But
I'd say mine would have to be Pizza Face.
Oh, yeah.
I can't say I remember seeing that one. You have to send us a picture there, Justin, because I don't remember seeing Pizza Face at all.
It's the chef with the pizza cutter as a peg leg, kind of, with a pizza box stuck.
What in the world?
Yep.
Dude, who comes up with stuff like that? That is just so weird.
Well, why not make...
I'll look him up.
Yeah, I've got him right here. Why not make...
me to it.
I'm sorry. I just got excited about it.
Pizza Face! Get the internet!
But why not make a villain out of something they love?
He was a villain?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was a villain, yeah.
Okay.
And then they got the new Pizza Face from the new series. He actually is pizza.
Yeah, that's true.
Wow. Dude. Look at that leg.
It's a pizza cutter.
Is that a box for a foot? Is that a pizza box for a foot?
Yeah. Stuck in the pizza box.
So that's my top.
I'll give you that one, Justin.
So what's your guys?
Man, let me go ahead and I'll throw my two cents in here. I'm trying to think. Baxter Stockman was definitely a good one because he was a fly. Yeah. I think he was definitely. I remember getting him originally and thinking that was pretty freaking cool.
I actually couldn't find Baxter Stockman around this area. I actually ended up getting him on vacation.
I'll tell you what, that Muck Man, when I ended up getting him, I didn't think he was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle at first.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was something that was, you know, I was like, what line does this go with? And Justin told me about it. And that thing is gross. I mean, it's Justin or any Ronnie, find a picture of Muck Man real quick. Throw him up there.
Got it.
He's got like a trash can. Doesn't he have like it's like almost Oscar the Grouch.
He's got banana peel on his head, and he's got a sewer manhole cover for his foot.
you could actually pour slime in the top of his head and come out of his mouth, and you could actually pour it in the trash can back and come out the hole in his stomach.
Yes, yeah. Wow. And he had a banana peel on his head, a frog. And the thing I remember now that I look at it, I always thought it was funny as a kid. He had a clothespin on his nose because he was made out of sewage.
He stunk so bad.
Yeah.
Dude.
I'll tell you who's worse than Baxter Stockman as far as bug guys go was Scumbug.
Scumbug. Wow.
There's a Baxter Stockman.
Scumbug and the Rat King looked like a hobo.
Yeah. I was going to say, if it wasn't for Muck Man, I would have probably went Rat King. But he was so freaking human. He just looked like, you know, somebody you'd find in the sewers accidentally, and he was a guy Bill Murray tried to save and couldn't in Scrooged.
And now that I see his toy, he had a freaking grappling hook made out of rats and a crossbow that shot rats.
That is messed up, man.
And a dead cat. Oh. As a loincloth with a snake belt, for a belt.
With tread marks on the cat.
Yeah, you couldn't get away with that nowadays.
Wow. A grappling hook made of rats.
It's rat. Do y'all know what, like, the definition of a rat king is? Like, how could you name a child's toy a rat king? It's a group of rats that, it's a term for a number, like a bunch of rats whose tails are intertwined.
Oh.
Like tied together, just for being around each other. And they just, they stick together.
I have never heard of this term.
Yeah, and it's disgusting. And it's just like, there's, I don't know if it's an actual thing or an urban legend, but I mean, ugh.
Benjamin, did you want to weigh in here? Or are you just
traumatized?
I don't know if I can top that. I'll be fairly boring and just say Krang, but
That's not boring, dude.
There's something to be said about just, a brain that also has eyes and a mouth and, tentacles, and it's kind of creepy.
Oh man.
In and of itself. Who posted that picture?
Dude. Oh.
I say I'm going to
Those aren't alive. There's no way those things are alive, right?
I'm going to toss them.
That's a dead rat king.
But yeah, I'm going to toss
I live someplace that actually has actual rats, man.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Benjamin.
I'm going to dominate my nightmares for the next several weeks.
That's some scary looking. I've never even heard of that before. That's crazy, dude.
Oh, man.
But why would you name a child's toy after that?
Well, they're obviously playing upon my ignorance. Thank goodness, because I had no idea that that's what that was. If that would have been something that my mom sat down and said, "Okay, we're thinking about getting you the Rat King figure. However, we want you to understand something."
I was denied the Maximum Carnage game just because it had the word Carnage in it.
Oh my goodness!
Oh jeez!
They're like, we don't want to get you that. They didn't understand that Carnage was a comic book villain. They were like, no, you probably just go around killing things. And I'm like, no, you stop a guy from killing things. And they're like, no, we'll get you baseball. So it's like, okay.
Yeah, I want to toss up two more characters here. I'm going to go with Mutagen Man and Worm.
That sounds familiar, but I don't know. This is all late generation stuff, isn't it? I mean, it's got to be.
Mutagen Man, you can actually fill him up with water and his organs floated in it.
What?
Oh my god, I remember that. I just Googled that. I'm like, I wish I hadn't have done that. There's a new version of it for the new series.
Oh, for the new series.
Yeah, it's not nearly as bad as the old one, though.
Wow. No. And what's Worm? What was Worm? I'm assuming a worm.
He looked like one of those flat worms.
Oh, like a tapeworm or something?
Yeah.
Did you spell it worm, or did you have to put like a Y in it?
W-Y-R-M. And see, he actually was in the Archie comics first before he made an appearance in the toy line, and they totally changed his look.
Well, I've got to see that when it pops up.
Benjamin, is that you?
you gonna beat me to it, Ronnie?
Thanks.
Because I got it here.
Oh, there he is.
He beat me to it.
It's the legs. Legs are different on every single one of these guys. Okay, we got... Now this one has no leg and a tail for a leg or something.
Toss up a Mutagen Man there, Ronnie.
I didn't find him.
Oh, I found it. Let me go back to it.
His hands are nothing but worms. Yeah, that's pretty messed
up. That creeps me out worse than the Rat King picture. The actual Rat King.
Oh, that is messed up. Oh,
that's the original on the left and the new one on the right.
I'm telling you, some of the people on the who were working on the toy line and on the TV show were working some issues out. I'm telling
you. Wow, that's crazy. Anything you want to do before we get one out of here and hit plugs here pretty soon?
After you've seen several dozen rats tied together, you really seen and said it all, haven't you?
Yeah.
Benjamin's like, I'm calling it a night. I'm done. Well, okay, how about you, Ronnie? You got anything you want to say here, man?
After you've seen several dozen rats...
That's the common sentiment of the podcast. If we didn't come away from this podcast learning something, I mean, damn, we failed.
I can't unsee it now.
Oh, man. Well, let's go ahead. We'll get into plugs in. First off, I want to thank you guys, Benjamin, Ronnie, Justin. You guys made this night a fun night. I'm glad I got to talk turtles with you guys. It was totally awesome. Cowabunga, dude. All right, Justin, go ahead, man. Hit us with some plugs there. I know you play some games. You're on Steam. You do some stuff. What are you doing? What are you doing here lately?
Okay, you guys can find me at Spectre13 on Steam. I'm pretty much up for about any kind of game. I mean, I got 700 to choose from. So anybody wants to join me on there, just send me a message or whatever. And I'm also on Xbox Live. Right now I'm in the old Borderlands game. So if you want to find me on there, I'm Arctic Lightning. Also, I'm playing Borderlands on the PlayStation, so on the PS3. So if you want to find me on the PlayStation Network, I'm under Spectre13 on there also. And also, if any of you guys feel the urge to stalk me out there,
if you're feeling froggy,
you could
don't get don't get too many of those on this here podcast. So don't worry about that.
You can creep my Facebook there if you want to check that out. Just find me under Justin Thomas and the approving Deadpool picture.
That's right.
If you want to try to make sure that's me, just look for the approving Deadpool picture. Also, you can find me under Spectre13 on Twitter and Gmail, or not Gmail, Google Plus. Also under the approving Deadpool picture. So,
hey, Deadpool approves. Thumbs up.
He definitely approves. So, I'm on numerous stuff, but I'll just leave it at that.
Spectre13. Remember that, folks, because you're pretty much going to find them. And don't spell Spectre right, okay? If you spelled it right, you messed up. It's S-P-E-K-T-R, right, Justin?
Yeah.
Okay.
I kind of have that Mortal Kombat feel to it.
There you go.
And then 13 is inspired by none other than Friday the 13th.
That's right. Ronnie Adams.
Yep.
Of the Screaming Boy Productions podcast.
Yep.
Plug some stuff, my man.
Adam Running and I have a podcast called Screaming Boy. It is now going to be called just the Screaming Boy Podcast. And we are in the middle of tweaking some stuff and redoing the show. We are no longer just going to be, I'll just go ahead. This is the first official announcement. We are no longer just going to be movie centric. We will be covering just about anything that piques our interest that has to do with pop culture, nerd culture, anything like that. You know, video games, movies, TV shows, music, not getting in on Jesse Starcher's territory, but maybe a little bit of comic book, news, things like that.
We'll leave Jesse to stick to the source material there.
Cheap plug. We're going to be moving towards that direction, mainly because we end up talking about that stuff anyway, so it's more comfortable for us, and it makes me spend less money at the movies. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've been really, really excited about it. We contacted a gentleman by the name of Dualcore, who is a nerdcore rapper or hip hop artist, and he actually is allowing us to use one of his songs as our official intro theme song, kind of a deal. It's really good stuff. So if you're into hip hop, or even if you're not, please by all means check him out, Dualcore on, you know, on Facebook, things like, you know, social media, whatever. He's got some great stuff out there. It's going to be really cool to transition into that. As far as past shows, we're still going to keep those up. I just had a really, really good time talking to Josh Calandros about Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. He is hysterical to talk to about this stuff and very knowledgeable. He says, I don't know that much about DC, but man, he will blow you away with the stuff that he does know. So it was a lot of fun. We went on saying we both really liked the movie, you know, and we're like, yeah, let's go in there and talk about it, because we don't know what critics, you know, why critics are panning this and why people saying it suck. And then we ended up drawing a lot of negative stuff out of it. But it was still a lot. But we do say what we liked, and that the positives kind of outdid the negatives on it. So, but it was a blast to talk about it. So it was a really cool show, a lot of fun. Please check that out. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and the Radulich and Broadcasting Network. And you can find us on social media, Screaming Boy Productions, which will be changed just to Screaming Boy Podcast more than likely soon, on Instagram, Screaming Boy on Facebook, and then Screaming Boy PR on Twitter. I think that's about it. I think we hit it all there.
All right.
Screamingboy.com.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And did you already give your Twitter?
Screaming Boy PR. At okay. Screaming Boy PR.
If you said it, I missed it. I'm sorry. I'm looking at pictures and I'm on the internet.
I talk too much.
All right, Benjamin. Last but definitely not least, my man, hit us with some plugs.
This time around, my plugs are probably going to be pretty light, so I will take this opportunity to say thanks for having me, and it was a good time.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys succeeded most of all in making me want to watch the first Ninja Turtle movie, like, right after I'm done with this.
Me too.
So I'm probably going to do that. Aside from that, plugs, as always, as ever, I write, draw, self-publish a comic called Soul Exodus. You can find information about that and other stuff at my website, soulexo.com, which I don't update nearly as much as I should, but I'm working on it. But also on Facebook, facebook.com/soulexo, and on my Twitter page, Twitter at soulexocomic, which I also include my sketchbook Saturday drawings. Every single Saturday, I will do at least one sketch of varying things from comics, from movies, from, you know, last week it was anime because I was in the card game room with my nephew at MegaCon in Orlando and I needed something to draw and I drew the first thing I saw, which was Yu-Gi-Oh! On his card game mat. Stuff like that. I take requests and I try to keep busy and posting as much artwork as I possibly can. Not too many conventions, to plug over the summer until, New York Comic Con in October. I do have plans in the works with Jesse for a particular Spider-Man comic that I want to cover next month. One of my favorite Spider-Man stories of all time is called Nothing Can Stop the Juggernaut from the 80s. It is drawn by one of my heroes, John Romita Jr. The second part of that comic came out the month I was born, so we will be doing this next month, which is my birth month. And I have a pretty cool story about that I don't want to give away here, and I'll probably talk about that when we get to the episode. But yeah, Spider-Man, Nothing Can Stop the Juggernaut, one of the great ones. And aside from that, I've been away for a while, but hopefully, because Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network is covering Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in all its forms this coming week, I will try to make a concerted effort to be part of the festivities, not just on this show, but as the title card artist for Long Road to Ruin, which will be covering the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise. I got two more days of vacation left. Hopefully I would like to spend them drawing, and I would like to spend them drawing this title card for this upcoming episode.
Cool.
They did X-Men and I missed it and I apologize and I really wish I had been in on that. I'm going to try to do Ninja Turtles for you guys and if I have an idea for it and hopefully I will be able to do it and hopefully you will all like it.
Aw, dude, awesome. You always come through, man. And it's some great stuff to see that title card art come up no matter what. No matter what the topic, love your take on it. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun to look at. Great stuff.
I just want to request one thing, sir. Please do not draw a Rat King.
I will go out of my way. I will make a concerted effort. I had no intention of drawing anything like that, but you heard it here first. I will. The idea I had is nothing even close to that. So have no fear. This will be a rat-free title card for this particular episode.
I was really hoping you'd say I had no intention of drawing in that anything like that. But
Until now.
We'll see what happens next month.
Man.
How about commissions, man? Are you still doing? Did you mention commissions?
I'm down for commissions at any time. You can email me at bjc@soulexo.com, or you can get in touch with me through Twitter. Always open for commissions. I have a price list that I'm willing to provide to anybody who asks me. I've posted a couple of sketch covers that I've done. I plan on doing more. A few of you have seen the Batman TMNT cover that I sold. I've done a few more since then. I may be working on another one tomorrow. Keep an eye on Twitter. You know, by the time this airs, it will already have been done. Check my Twitter page anyway.
Keep an eye out. Well, as for myself, I'll just go ahead and throw some plugs in here real quick. I believe I should be showing up on the or at least make it an appearance. I know there's a lot of people stacked up for Long Road to Ruin, and they're doing all the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1, 2, and 3 movies. So depending on the room, if I can slide in there and get my opinion on the show, I'll do that.
There was a third movie?
Nah, boy, oh boy. I can't.
Yeah, it's the only one on Netflix, and it ticks me off.
I know,
We don't speak of it. Netflix speaks of it, but we don't.
So anyway, yeah, they're gonna have some fun with the franchise there, and I'm gonna try and get on there and talk a little bit with them.
Can I interject one last thing, Jesse?
Yeah, go ahead, dude.
Mention Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3. There is a comic book adaptation of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3.
Okay.
It's way better than the movie.
Is it really?
Yes, it's pretty good. It's not, for considering what they had to work with to adapt it from. Now I'm linking an image of that, of the TMNT 3 comic.
I did not know there was one.
I had it for years, and finally I read it so many times that it fell apart, but it can only be so good considering, but it's not terrible.
Okay, well, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Out of the Shadows, or not, I think it's TMNT 2 now. It's not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it's TMNT.
Go Ninja, go.
No. Out of the Shadows, I am going to go see that Sunday. I'm taking my son.
Nice.
It's not considered child abuse. You Michael Bay haters out there. We're going to go watch that at the theater Sunday, and I am going to talk about it with Jason Teasley and Mark Radulich on the Movie Review Club this coming week.
I'm hearing it's basically a love letter to the cartoon.
Oh, that's good. I'm excited. I can't wait to see it. And I, from what I understand, Winfrey, either he has other obligations or he just does not want to talk Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I just might make an appearance on the Metal Hammer of Doom, the recent Hell Yeah album released. I know all you guys are excited about that, but I'll be hopping on there maybe, depending on if the wife will let me. Because too many podcasts can happen around here at the Starcher household. That happens every once in a while. Other than that, I just want to thank you guys again for spending the last 2 hours and some with me here to talk Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, really, this is a franchise. This is a part of my childhood. This is a part of your childhood. And it was interesting to go back and be able to see that genesis, that first step and that first bit of birth into greatness. It's been crazy. Thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. I want to talk to everybody out there that's listening. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you guys later. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes Source Material's coverage of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles issue number 1. Next show on the agenda will be in late June, a couple weeks from this Monday. We should be talking the What You're Reading special, where I'm going to try and talk to a lot of the previous guests on Source Material, and we are going to discuss just what exactly they're reading. Again, make sure to check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Just search Radulich. I want to thank you all again for being here tonight and listening. We appreciate it greatly. So without further ado, I'm sending you on your way. Have a good one.